Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 526, Flashbacks, recorded live on February 4th, 2016. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And you can tell that we're kind of lacking a few co-hosts this week. Right now, Bio is having problems with internets, and Haas couldn't make it for some family stuff, I believe. So it's just me and GT rocking the house tonight, but we got quite a bit of stuff to talk about. Lots of news actually coming out this week, which is kind of cool. And the X Games happened last weekend as well. We got to see some really cool Halo gameplay from the X Games in Aspen, Colorado, which was awesome. And we had the UK finals, I think, 2 weeks ago. And then we have the Australian qualifiers this coming weekend as well. So there's lots of Halo streaming stuff going on lately. And it's lots of good Halo stuff. Lots of stuff to watch. Lots of cool stuff coming out. We got Infinity's Armory, and I've been having a lot of fun with the Urban, and I haven't gotten Riptide that much. Granted, I haven't played much Arena compared to Warzone. I'm mostly a Warzone guy, but Riptide's kind of cool. It plays very differently, I think, to Fathom. And I know Haas and I talked a little bit about last week. Have you had a chance to kind of catch up on some of the new maps yet, GT?
Yeah, I've gotten 4 or 5 matches on it. It definitely plays different than any other map in the rotation. Granted, I was playing SWAT, so you know, I don't know power weapons and stuff yet.
Right.
There definitely are a couple areas where everybody seems to focus, and they tend to be around the bridges, or I don't know if they're, you could actually call them bridges, but they're just, you know, high levels. It seems to focus everybody kind of into that one area. It's all right. As far as my opinion of the map, it's kind of still out. I can't say that I like it or really dislike it yet. I need some more time on it because I'm still learning the map. But it's coming along. I think it's an okay map. It probably could use some tweaks as far as spawn points, at least in SWAT. Maybe this weekend I'll get into some Arena and see if I can pick it up there so I can look at power weapons and stuff.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those things where I've only played it with SWAT, so I can kind of have the Slayer feel for it. And a few custom games that I played when it first came out last week with some of the RUO folks was we did some power weapons and we did Halo 2 BR start. So it feels like an okay Slayer map, but I don't see it necessarily being a good CTF map or a Strongholds. It could be a good Strongholds map. I haven't played it with Strongholds. Strongholds is one of those things, is whereas depending on where the Strongholds are, it could play well, because a lot of Strongholds, you have a base that you kind of start off with that you kind of hold, and then there's one that's kind of that swing base that you want to keep hold of that's central in the map. So depending on where that setup is for Riptide, I could see Riptide possibly being a decent map, but I think there's too long of routes to get to certain areas of the map where Riptide might not flex as well to Strongholds, but it's hard to say without having played it and knowing where those Strongholds are.
Yeah, you're right, depending on where the Strongholds are. But if they're placed correctly, I think it'd be a good Strongholds map. Probably would be a good one objective, like one flag or one bomb, if we had one bomb. But I think it would play good for like a one flag match, not a two flag.
It could. I would think that maybe it's hard to say, because a lot of these maps are designed, seem to be designed around the focal point of very much the game modes that are in there right now. So two flags, yeah. CTF, Strongholds, and Slayer. I could kind of see this as a one flag or one side objective. It really depends, though. It seems like Halo 5 wasn't really made in mind for one flag CTF, even though they're like traditionally there have been some really great one flag or neutral flag maps in Halo, but it doesn't really seem like the design for Halo 5 has really been garnered towards that. So I think if they ever give those options to us in CTF, which I hope that they would at some point, I think it's going to be a lot up to the community to actually make those kinds of maps instead of relying on some of these 343 made maps. I mean, it would be nice to see some of these maps actually be geared towards some of the other game modes. So whenever we do get, or if we do get the ball game modes that they said they were working on for this month, if we actually do get those out this month, then it would be nice to see them further down the line make maps that are more geared towards those new game modes instead of these, which seem to be more of the traditional multiplayer. Now, stuff with like Oddball, that kind of fits in any map because it's kind of like a variant on Slayer, so that would work. King of the Hill, that's that kind of can float well, but it plays the same around.
It plays,
so.
Yeah, it plays similar to Strongholds. Granted, the hill isn't fixed, but you would still
they would need to fix the spawn system in Halo 5, or at least update it a little bit to actually fit well with that game mode.
But you know, just to get back to the what I was saying, I don't think, and I'm with you on this, I don't think the map would play very well with two flags. I think that if we get a one flag CTF, I think, or neutral flag CTF, I think that map would work really well with that. I just, the two flag thing, I just don't think it would play very well.
Yeah, I don't think it would either, just because of the design of the map. Now, Fathom, it works because it is symmetrical.
Mm-hmm. Or an attack defend type game type, like Assault right. or something like
there,
that.
There are very few maps in Halo in the past where they have been two flag CTFs that haven't been symmetrical. A lot of those game, a lot of those maps have been, like the ones that are good CTF maps have been symmetrical. There are, I think maybe just a handful, I can't even think of any off the top of my head right now, that are asymmetrical. But most of the CTF maps that you see are, or at least a lot of the good two flag ones, are mostly symmetrical.
Yeah, I think the only asymmetrical map I ever played two flag on with any regularity was Zanzibar, or one of its variations.
Zanzibar, I always played it one side objective. One side yeah. objective seemed to be the stronger suit.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm not saying it was a strong suit. The two flag doesn't play real well on that asymmetrical map. One flag plays really well. You know, assault or the one-sided objectives, attack, defend type work real well with it. And I think that's kind of what Riptide leans itself towards, just in the map design and the map flow.
Right. I was trying to think of an asymmetric map that fit well with two flag.
I just can't think of one. Yeah. All the ones that I enjoyed the most with two flag were symmetrical maps. You know, in Customs, I've played two flag on some of the other maps, but they didn't really play that well, even though they were set up for them.
Anyone in the chat have any ideas? See if we can get some crowd resources in there on thinking about that. I mean, I could throw like Chiron in there. It's not symmetrical at all, but people get so lost and confused that if you were to try to do a two flag on there, people would probably get lost.
I don't think you could do a one flag on that one. That thing,
so I've geez. Done it on PC. You can do
I'm
it.
I'm not saying you can't, but I get lost on that thing just doing shotties.
I forged it in Halo 3, so I actually know how all the rooms fit together.
Well, good for you.
And there's actually an image that's out there that you can get that shows you how all the teleporters connect, so that kind of helps too.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it's
at,
really
one time. At one time, I downloaded it, but it's lost in the terabytes of unused data that I have, or it got deleted.
I'm going to, at some point, whenever I have time to actually go into Forge, make a Chiron remake, depending if one hasn't already been remade, which it probably has, but if it, depending on how it looks, I'll do it better. I'll try to, at least, if it warrants actually improving on whatever version's out there already.
One map
do you
I
have any
like,
kind of ideas that you want to try to forge?
Well, I've always wanted to, and I started to do this in Reach, but I just couldn't get the scale right, or couldn't get it to feel right, but map from Halo CE, boarding action.
Ah, you could do boarding action really well in Halo 5 Forge.
Yeah, and I got to thinking about it with the clamber and everything, that map, I think that map would be a lot of fun, especially if you scaled it correctly. I am not a forger. I might go in and tinker with it, but it's definitely not a map I'm going to put out there and let people play. But I would like to see one of the forgers redo that, because I think with the Halo 5 mechanics, I think that map would play really well because it's definitely big enough.
And I'm also thinking that you can get the man cannons to go across because you had teleporters in the past, but instead of using teleporters, why not use man cannons? And then you can, like, as you're going over, you can start a ground pound, and then you can just ground pound to the other side.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
At least everybody I've ever talked to, they don't like boarding action. Well, sorry. I like that map.
So, I don't know.
Get me wrong. It's not a perfect map. It's not.
Oh, no.
by no means is it a perfect map. But it's still fun to play on for me. Back when we were playing, back when I first started playing Halo, we'd have four guys on one Xbox on that map. And it was always a race to get to the snipers and the invis. And we'd sit there and play for 30 minutes just sniping each other.
I think I did that a couple of times, actually. Well, and another thing, too, about boarding action, like to kind of go back on your previous statement, it's one of those things where I actually hear it come up quite a bit. And of like whenever you go around asking people like maps that they think about, boarding action seems to be one of those ones that it's not like the one that comes up, but it sneaks in there every once in a while. It's like, really, boarding action?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It's one of those maps that's it's not really well designed in terms of like overall playability, but for some reason it's one of those maps that just kind of sticks to people. I think it's a lot more in long lines for snipers. I think that's for people that like sniping.
It is great for snipers.
Yeah, I think that map would probably be catering towards more people that like to snipe, and that's probably who would like boarding action more.
But the nice thing about it is there's still places in it for CQC and mid-range combat. Yes, the snipers are pretty dominant on that map, provided the other team's on the other side. If they're on the same side as you, sniper is not so effective. But I'm just thinking of somebody jumping off the third level and ground pounding somebody on the first level.
I think it would be pretty cool.
Or if you put the man cannons on it, ground pounding somebody off the man cannons.
Yep. Well, and I think for Halo 5, that would work perfectly. I think having those new mechanics in there. And another thing, too, which a lot of people have started to do with remaking some of these older maps is in the game types, you can turn off all of the Spartan abilities. So you're going back to the style of how you were playing Halo back in Halo 1, 2, and 3 with no sprint, no jetpack, no clamber. So if you wanted to make something that was truly a classic, you could. So some people are doing it that way where they make the map and they make the game type associated with it to where you're playing off of classic Halo settings. And some other maps have been remade in a way where it accounts in scale or adding things or removing things to account for the new Spartan ability. So there's a few different efforts out there. And I know there's talking with the community cartographers when they were on here and talking to some other people, there are people on the Waypoint forums and on like Halo Customs and some of the other community sites that are out there actively trying to build a library of forged maps for all the previous Halo maps. So everyone is out there trying to do it.
The trick is getting it to play. You getting a lot of these maps to play well with Halo, well with Halo 5, because the movement is so different in Halo 5. There are some things that have to change in these maps. I mean, longest haul. We used to play that thing with rockets. we'd set the kills up to about 100 and just run around blowing ourselves up and blowing everybody else up.
Elongation and Longest were some good maps.
Yeah, they were.
Longest, gosh. I remember they were, whenever, I think they had a stream when, like, right before MCC was coming out, and I think Major Nelson was on or something, and one of the game modes I think they had was Rockets on Longest or something like that. Or I remember seeing some stream about that whenever MCC was first coming out. So, yeah, Longest is a classic with rockets, and then Elongation was just a good...
Yeah, it was a good reboot of that map.
And it played well for Two Flag, it played well for Assault, it played well for a lot of game modes, actually, if you think about it, except King of the Hill. King of the Hill was kind of eh for Elongation, but everything else, and even Slayer.
Of the map.
Well, yeah, very true. But everything else was, it worked really well on that map.
Yeah, that is probably one of the most universal maps that has ever been made for Halo. It kind of fit everything.
Gosh, I want to get that remake from Halo 5 now.
Yeah.
Because you can animate the boxes going down the walkways.
Mm-hmm. Although, that reminds me.
How would you do like a conveyor belt where you could knock the boxes off?
Oh, I'm sure they could figure out a scripting item to do that. I was digging around on YouTube the other day, and somebody's actually made like a Frogger game type.
I'm not surprised. Well, and then with all the, I'm sure you've seen, well, I guess for people that in the stream that may not have heard, there is a, people are saying it's a glitch, but I don't think it's necessarily really a glitch, but you can weld forge pieces to vehicles. So people have been making these ships, and one of the big things is Star Wars, because Star Wars just came out a couple months
really?
Ago.
Did they just release a Star Wars movie?
You know, it's this big thing, whole like episode 7. Yeah. Anyways, there is a whole plethora of maps and creations out there from people making Star Wars ships. And I think this was either yesterday or on Tuesday, but someone came out with a whole course and different kinds of pod racers. So there's literally a pod race in Halo now.
Yeah, the funny thing is to see how quickly that evolved. Because when they first figured it out, the vehicles were really glitchy and stuff. They were hard to fly or hard to drive because they just go off in weird angles. But man, they've got it figured out to where, these things are drivable or flyable, whatever you want to call
it. And I think it was, this was, I think, 3, maybe 4 weeks ago, something like that. And Duquesne was had been tweeting out, obviously, because he loves Star Wars. He was tweeting out a series of these Forge creations about how people have made these ships and whatnot. And I replied, they need to make Forge objects where it's just the frame of a vehicle. So you could have a land vehicle frame and then a flying vehicle frame. So something that has the physics of a flying vehicle, so a Banshee, and I think they've said they're going to add UNSC vehicles. Yeah, they have said they're going to add UNSC vehicles at some point. So whether that's kind of like a Hornet or a Falcon or whatever, have that as another mechanism. And then have a land vehicle frame that's like maybe just... Because you know how the frame of a car... Like if you took the outside frame of the car, you have the bottom that just has the wheels and the transmission in it. Have something like that where it's just... You can build something on top of it and just have the wheels underneath. Or be able to size the frame
to fit the vehicle,
and so you can have like a frame that's a they use feet in Halo 5 for it instead of world units, so maybe a 4x8 foot frame or a 8x12 foot frame, something like that. I think that'd be pretty cool.
What I'm waiting for somebody to do in that respect, and I know we're getting a little off topic, but build a vehicle that a whole team can climb on. You have the central Banshee.
Machinima. Okay.
You have the central Banshee, and then you have weapon turrets placed throughout the vehicle.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh.
And you build two of them, and you place energy cores under shield doors or something like that, so it takes a little bit to get, the vehicle has to take a little bit of damage before it would actually destroy part of it. But, put an energy barrel right behind the weapon underneath, invisible barrier or something like that. So it takes enough damage. One, it kills the occupant, and then it destroys the turret. So, now you've got a dead spot. I'm waiting to see somebody do something like that. And, you build two of them, one for each team, and the idea is to destroy the other person's vehicle.
Oh, so you're talking about like a space palace type of thing.
Kinda, yeah. Hey, wait a minute. We've got a space map.
Did you see the map? And this was on iSpiteful channel, but they broke out of Truth, and they basically have an all-out space battle. It's just everyone gets some Banshees. It's a breakout space battles.
You know, if you'd show up to game night every once in a while, you'd see that stuff.
Yeah.
Friday nights have been. Yes, we already played it.
Okay, all right. So, yes, you have seen it.
The only thing that I would highly recommend, and don't get me wrong, guys, it is a great map. It is done awesome. But if you are sensitive to flashing lights, like
why are you playing Halo in the first place?
Well, I mean, like epileptic seizure type, you know, you, a blinking light can set some people off. Don't play that map because it does, since they did break out of the map, the lighting is a little screwed up, but it's still fun to play. It will flash. It does a lot of, you'll get a lot of light flashes out of it. But other than that, man, it's a great map. It was a lot of fun. We were playing at, and it's, you get a lot of clutch moments in that map. You get one on two, one on three Banshees, and the guy pulls out the win. It's a lot of fun.
Naked Eli would just wipe faces off of that map, since he's like a master Banshee flyer, master Banshee pilot. So yeah, lots of cool customs. But let's get to some of the news for this week. We had quite a few little things come out, nothing major and huge, other than the X Games results, which came down to a rivalry, which was kind of cool, and it's what everyone hoped for. The finals were EG versus CLG, and for those that don't really follow competitive, kind of like us, there was a little bit of a controversial change in the roster. So Lethal left EG and joined CLG, and EG picked up Commonly. And for the entire tournament during X Games, CLG hadn't lost a single game, and EG had made it to the finals. They sacrificed some games to teams that they were playing, but they made it to the finals, and it came down to a game seven. So the X Games tournament style, they did best of fives for all of the lower tiers, and then when it got to the semis, then they did the best of seven. So I believe it was CLG that took the first two, EG took the second two, CLG took game five, EG took game six, and then it came down to Slayer on Regret for game number seven, and EG pulled out the win for the X Games. So they are the first Halo team to receive X Games gold.
That is truly incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to have Halo in the X Games, which is in the past not been traditionally that type of sport. To have them include video games in this year's games is awesome. And to have the finals come down to the last game, I don't think you could ask for anything better.
That's what everyone was really wanting. And for something that, like, for as big as CLG and EG are in terms of like team recognition, and especially with the history behind what happened over the week prior with Lethal leaving EG and joining up with CLG, there is definitely that rivalry there of them trying to prove which one is the better team. And then EG comes out on top. So that was interesting to see the outcome of that. And with a lot of the stuff that went on during the X Games, I'm wondering how much of a foreshadow that is going to be for the championship, because we had two international teams get invited over with this. We had a team from Germany and a team from, was it the UK? Yeah, Germany and the UK. And both of them they didn't hit the top four. So only eight teams were invited, and they only placed the top four teams. So they didn't place at all.
Mm.
And I'm kind of like, I'm going for a little bit for the underdog here, because I want to see some international teams come and actually make a stand against the U.S. It's going to be hard to do that because the U.S. has been playing Halo for so long. So a lot of the pros that are here already, they're the ones that know the game the best. But I would like to see some kind of underdog just come up and at least give the U.S. teams a run for their money.
I'm sure there will be some teams that do. Unfortunately, I have not been following the European... Well, I haven't been following any of the brackets that closely. I'll check in on the American circuit every once in a while. But I'm with you, Dust. I'm hoping that one of these teams from outside the United States actually offers a good challenge to some of the American teams.
Yeah, because I want to see some talent outside the U.S. make it into this tournament? Because, I mean, we already know that people are going to be coming from other countries. There's 16 spots, and only 8 of them are being filled by the U.S. So we know that there's going to be some other teams coming from the coming internationally. But I want to see some of the... the best team right now is... from the international spectrum is... I think it's not Renegades. I think it's Team Allegiance from the UK. I think
that
that's...
sounds right.
Let me see. I think so. I'm going to check real quick. But they would be... Because they also had, during the promo season for Halo 5, before Halo 5 launched, they had the thing in Cologne, Germany, and they were one of the teams invited, and I think they won that exhibition in Germany. Someone in the chat, correct me if you know the answer, or who those are. I think it's Allegiance. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Here it is. On Xbox... Or the teams, yeah, Allegiance. So I think they're the ones that would probably have the best shot from the UK, at least kind of how that is playing out right now. But I don't know about, I would like to see some of these other countries be like, just kind of come out of nowhere and be like, hey, we're good enough to compete with some of these US folks. We got some stuff to strut type of thing.
I think we're going to see some teams that pull off some pretty amazing games. I just don't know how far they're going to make it. I hope they make it to the semis, at least, because I would really like to see, you know, the top teams go head-to-head. But we'll know here shortly.
So I would like to see at least 2 international teams or more make the top 8. I think there's going to be a few U.S. teams that drop below the top 8. And I think that's... I think we'll see... too. I would like to see maybe something like 3 or 4 international teams make the top 8. I would like to, but I highly doubt we'll see any of them make the top 4. I just don't think on the international scene, because the competitive scene hasn't been there as much. I mean, UK has had a little bit of it, or at least kind of the Europe region has had a little bit. Australia has had a little bit, but you look at Africa, you look at Asia, there hasn't really been a competitive focus for that. I mean, Asia is only getting 1 team. Latin America is only getting 1 team. Australia and New Zealand are getting 2 teams. And then the UK, Europe, Middle East, and Africa is all bundled into one. And I have a feeling that's going to be mostly heavily weighted towards Europe and even more heavily weighted towards UK for those 4 teams. So you have kind of underrepresentation just because there hasn't been as much exposure to those regions. So I would like to see... I would just like to see a team kind of come in here and be like, hey, we can play Halo 2.
Yeah, and we're going to see it. It's just to what extent we're going to see it. Yeah, I have no doubt that the people, the teams that come in from the international scene are going to be worthy of being there. You know, I've caught pieces of some of the games over in the UK, and I'm just as amazed with some of the crap they pull off as I am when I'm watching the American...
U.S. folks, yeah.
The U.S. folks. I mean, it's just... If I could play Halo like that, I wouldn't be here.
I don't know. There's the pro team at 343. There's pros that don't play Halo necessarily. I mean...
Like I said, I wouldn't be here. I'd be somewhere else. Hopefully making a hell of a lot more money. But anyway...
Fair point.
No, I think it's when it comes down to the grand finals, I think it's going to be a good show. No matter what really actually happens, I think it's going to be a really good show.
It will be. I just want to see some international teams kind of get out there and actually put up some good competition and not just get wiped.
I don't know that they're going to get wiped, but they've got a hard fight ahead of them.
That they do. But yeah, so that's the X Games. Congratulations to EG. I know we've been trying to get them on for a long time. Hopefully we can get them on here sometime soon so we can actually talk to them and get something done with that. It's just been trying to get schedules lined up. Hasn't really worked out too well. And they're practicing all the time whenever they're like not working or not in school or whatever.
Well, they're in the middle of a tournament.
or in the middle of a tournament, yeah.
You know, they're busy.
Yep. So we're going to try to knock down sometime, hopefully this month, to talk to them. And I put out a poll a while ago saying what teams people would want us to interview, and EG came up, I think Optic came up, and there's another one that came up as well. And we want to get those interviews. We really want to talk to the teams and get their idea. And I mean, EG's kind of a touch to my heart, because Taui kind of got his start with Halo from Podtacular. So there's a little bit of Podtacular connection there.
That does help.
Yeah, just a little bit. So that's something that we're going to try to get set up. I mean, we're trying to get it constantly. So it's just a matter of nailing something down and when to get that done. For those of you who play Arena, the seasons have been changed over to the February season. So if you played from, I think it was like December 18th when they started the January season, up until January 31st, if you got a rank in an Arena playlist, then you would have gotten a special January 2016 season rec pack, which includes your January emblem, and then I think it was maybe a handful of other recs, like some boosts.
Nothing real impressive.
Nothing that impressive, really. But you do get the emblem, and they've changed over to the February month. So if you are playing Arena, make sure and even if you're just go do FFA and get a rank in the FFA playlist and don't play Arena at all, just go and play 10 matches in Arena, get ranked, and then you'll have the pack. You only have to get ranked in one playlist. And it doesn't even have to be a good rank. There's no minimum rank requirement to get these. So just play Arena, get a rank in a playlist, and then you'll be guaranteed to get this rec pack. And these are the only ways that you can get these season emblems, is by getting a rank in these seasons. Again, something else that keeps you coming back to getting a rank, or actually keeping on playing Halo, but just keep on doing it.
Yeah, you get free stuff.
Yep. They changed up a little bit of the ranking stuff. So for Onyx and Champions, they did a little bit of tweaking based on community feedback. And so one of the big things, and I think this was kind of pretty evident early on, especially with me placing Onyx during a lot of the preseason stuff and when Halo 5 first came out, but people definitely noticed that if you were just one of the first 200 people in Onyx, you would instantly get champion rank, because you were the only ones in the Onyx rank. So they're changing up the CSR requirement. So there's a minimum CSR to earn champion rank that is... So there's a number value behind. So once you get to the Onyx rank, you actually have a number value that's your skill rank. And for Onyx, it had been 1,500, and they're bumping that up to 1,800. So you can, I'm not sure what the math behind about what's the highest rank you can get just based off of 10 games, but I'm guessing that 1,800 makes it to where you can only get to champion after you've been in Onyx for a little while, and you have to actually work your way up into champion.
Yeah, that's the way that should be.
Oh, and if I read further on, I would have seen this, but you can only, the cap is whenever you get first place is 1,700. So you won't get placed in champion. So if you do absolutely the best you can for your placing games, those first 10 games, the max rank you can get is 1,700. And then champion rank will only be given to you once you get into the 1,800 range. And those are both rolled out for the February season.
Well, I can definitely tell they didn't do anything with the lower ranks, because I ranked in at gold 2 again on SWAT this season.
That just means you're consistent, right?
Yeah. The last season, I worked myself up to gold 5, so before they reset.
Right.
But I wasn't playing SWAT real diligently. That is the only one I actually rank in. I'll goof around in the other ones, but my main go-to when I play Arena is SWAT. But I've been goofing around and, working on finding custom games and stuff, so that kind of eats in my actual matchmaking time.
Gotcha. So another thing that we had given to us as well with Waypoint is we got a little bit of glimpse into some of the matchmaking stuff behind the scenes. So they've made some tweaks to how people get matched up and whatnot, and they said they got a lot of data from the multiplayer beta a year ago about how the Xbox cloud, the Azure cloud infrastructure, has an effect on playability for the game. So they really nailed down some of the networking factors and some of the latency factors to try to give people an optimal experience. And for the most part, they said that 95% of players in matches have had pings of 125 milliseconds or better. So 125 millisecond, well, it's actually a little bit different now because it's not 30 frames per second anymore. But 125 milliseconds would be about 13 frames. No, that's not right. No, that'd be, I think I'm getting my math wrong. Anyways, it's like a small percentage of frames that you would actually have in terms of delay. So you would shoot and there'd be some kind of delay. So one frame would be, I was right, 12 frames. Because one frame 30 at 30 frames per second would be 33 milliseconds. So yeah, it's about 11, 12 frames. So on 30 frames per second, it'd be like more like six frames. So it's kind of significant, but from a first person shooter perspective, there's at least some logic in there to kind of help adapt for that smaller amount of ping. And it's also important to note that just below 90% is at least under 100 milliseconds, which is for first person shooters, if you're under 100 milliseconds, then you're pretty well off. The idea is to be like within a couple, like two or three frames. So for Halo 5, you'd really want to be somewhere within like 50 milliseconds. And you're doing really well if you're within 50 milliseconds of your dedicated server.
Well, I have noticed here lately that I've been getting less people teleporting.
Actually, I've seen it more lately for some reason.
I have seen it less.
Huh.
Usually I'll see it maybe a quarter to a third of the games I play each night. But like tonight, I saw one person, and that was in a Warzone match, that literally teleported. And, I mean, it wasn't like they teleported across the map. They just shifted a few feet, you know, just like that little bit of, just a little bit of lag. And it could be just their internet connection stuttered. But I've noticed a lot less of people jumping around than I did before. Not that it was ever really that bad. It was just bad enough that you would notice it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess for me, maybe the changes haven't been quite as optimal because a lot of the stuff before, I think, I don't know, maybe a week or two into January, I didn't really notice anybody jumping around. Then for the past 3 weeks, whenever I've been playing Warzone, there have been quite a few matches where it's like, oh, these people are jumping around like crazy. And granted, it's only for like maybe 20 seconds, but I've noticed it a lot more recently than I have in the past.
Well, that could also be due to Snowmageddon, too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I didn't think about that, but you make a good point. Yeah, no, that's true.
You know, when you get feet of snow, they do tend to run a little harder on the utilities.
Yeah, that's true. No, that's a good point. So based on some of the feedback that people have got, and then there was the community... There was a weekend community playlist that they used to as a test for some things. It was back in December. Do you remember what playlist this was? There's a community playlist.
Wasn't it like a community forge or something like that? I forget what they actually called it, but...
Yeah, I can't remember. It was something, I think, back in December.
Yeah, it was something similar to the community forge playlist that we had in Halo 4, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they did some networking tests to kind of look at some new stuff. And from that, they've implemented some new granular controls that they have over the matchmaking infrastructure for Halo 5. And they've used that to apply to some of the regions that are a little more troublesome. So there's also a graph that they put up here for the Asia and South America region where there was about 10% of people that had a ping of over 150 milliseconds. And then just over 70% of people that had less than 100 millisecond ping. So there are some regions that they have found that they really need to work on trying to isolate some of the issues and then fine tune some of the infrastructure stuff to reduce those impacts. So they're looking into that. They're using the test that they did from the December playlist, whatever that one was, to find some new parameters to kind of include in their metrics when it comes to matchmaking. So that's something that they've been working on. Something else that they are working on is a new rec bundle. So on Tuesday, Amazon posted a new listing for an Amazon, or not Amazon, an Arena rec bundle. And then 343 confirmed that yesterday, where it's similar to the Warzone premium rec bundle. You'll get 14 premium rec bundles spanned out 2 per week, identically to Warzone. And just like the Warzone ones, you can only redeem 1 per account. That wasn't something that was explicitly stated for the Warzone ones, but what they explicitly stated it for the Arena bundle. But that comes out February 16th, which is just under 2 weeks from us recording this. And that's going to include permanent unlocks. I don't think it's going, because it's Arena, I highly doubt it's going to include any certification unlocks.
No, it is all cosmetic.
Right. And in addition to the 14 packs, you're also going to get the Mark V Alpha helmet. And I guess to wrap that up, the cost is $24.99.
And just so you guys know, it will be replacing the Warzone Rec bundle.
What do you mean replacing?
In other words, the Warzone Rec bundle is going away. Not right away, but it is leaving.
So
they were reading, I was reading on Waypoint today, I think it was, where they were talking about it.
So it's just going away from, because whenever you are in Halo 5, you'll get a, if you go to the rec store, if you haven't purchased the Warzone rec bundle, then there's an option to purchase it in the store. So they're just replacing that entry with the Arena rec bundle. You can still go buy the Warzone pack on Xbox.com or buy one of the cards in a brick and mortar store.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I should have phrased that differently.
Yeah. So you can still buy them. It's just you won't be able to buy them through the Halo 5 store menu. But yeah, it's getting replaced in that sense. But that's, yeah, it's just a different entry. But I already pre-ordered it on Amazon. If you go through Amazon, use our link in the article. We get a little help from that back. And we may have an extra one to give away to someone as well when it comes out.
Ooh.
Yes.
Free stuff.
Yes. Good stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully that'll help me unlock some wrecks. So I did a little math the other day, and I figured out, and I've played since then, so I need approximately 2 million wreck points to complete my, to fully flesh out every single piece of permanent unlockables.
That is currently available.
Yeah. 2 million. Now, it is suffice to say that I have more than half of the stuff unlocked already in every single category. So, certifications, stances, armors, and emblems. I have at least half in every one of those categories, thankfully.
I think my highest is like 30%. Jeez, man. Yeah. What have you been doing?
I get my dailies in, and I just get rec points. And there's like every maybe 2 or 3 weekends or so, I'll get invited by like Goose or Cow to play Warzone, and I'll just play Warzone for 5 hours on a Saturday.
I guess that works too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where silver packs don't really give me a whole lot.
In terms of what?
I get boosts and I get rec points.
Are you getting permanent unlocks?
No.
Oh, so you need to go to gold.
Yeah. So I'm not getting much out of the dailies.
Wait, what level
anyway.
Are you?
50.
Wait, how are you a 50? And I've already unlocked everything in silver. I'm a 66 and I haven't even locked everything in silver.
I went on a silver spree. Like in December, I opened 67. Well, when we came back from Christmas break, I opened 67 packs and probably a good 40 to 50 of those were silvers.
You must have gotten a lot more rec points per game than I have. Like,
oh, I average. If I play. Yeah, if I play my normal, I'll do anywhere from 50,000 to 70,000 a week in rec points.
So are you doing like only rec point boosts and not XP boosts?
No, I do both. When I run out of rec point boost, I move over to XP boosts.
Yes, Eric Yabu, I know you have all of them. I think you're probably in the top 50. I'm willing to bet you're in the top 50 of ranks in Halo 5. I like, there's no way you're not in the top 50.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't, because I have a life outside of Halo.
I do too.
That's a bad thing, Eric Yabu. That's a bad thing.
I will be there at some point. It might just take a couple years to get there.
I might be retired by the time I get there. Anyway.
Heck, I haven't even reached Inheritor on Reach yet.
Don't remind me. I think I still got 60 million points to go to get to Inheritor. I don't know.
I think I'm in the single million range.
You're a lot closer than me.
I think I'm a noble, if I remember right.
I forget what I am. I would have to look, and I don't remember.
Yeah. Once they fix the backward compatibility issues with the frame rates on Reach, then I think a lot of people will go back to that.
Oh, frame rates are bad.
Yeah. It sucks. Which is funny, because that's kind of like the one game I think a lot of people that had Xbox Ones were waiting of, like, getting Reach backwards compatible, and now people are just like, eh. And Griffball was really relying on it, too. And that kind of just fell flat on its face, sadly.
Yeah, I think when I move, I'm going to do a rack for, you know, like rack mount, server rack, and I'm going to put my original Xbox, my 360, and my Xbox One all on the rack and get me a little Switch to switch back and forth between them.
I have a Switch that got recommended to me. I'll have to send it to you after the show. But I've been trying to think about how I could best do that with my desk and get something that's not where I have to screw it into the desk, but maybe make something where I could have my consoles underneath my desk and then do...
Well, what I was going to do is just get like one of those 34U floor server racks.
Yeah, but that still takes up like... it still takes up quite a bit of space.
It takes up about this... A little bit more space than a two-drawer filing cabinet, as far as floor space.
34U is, like, 5 feet.
No, I meant floor space. Square. On the ground.
Oh.
Who cares about vertical height?
Oh. Well, whenever I think of you, I think of, like, stacking, like, the traditional server rack.
Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, it is a vertical stack, but I'm also looking at moving my computer out of a tower into a server case.
Really?
Well, yeah, so I'd have a UPS in there, a couple of drawers for, you know, just computer junk, my consoles, my PC, just kind of all stacked in the cabinet.
Interesting.
I've been kind of looking at running everything over a USB 3 connection, but this isn't a tech show, so. Back to Halo.
But you don't game too much on your desktop, do you?
No, I don't game on my desktop at all.
Or don't need anything like super real time.
Yeah, I don't. I'll play Spartan Assault or Spartan Strike, and that's about it on the computer.
Gotcha.
You know, every once in a while, I'll fire up the Halo PC, you know, whether it be CE or Halo 2. But ever since I put Windows 10 on, I haven't even installed the games yet.
Fair enough. And I only have Windows 10 on my laptop. I don't even have it on my desktop yet, and I haven't really played many games on there.
Yeah, I'd hold off on the next desktop for a while.
Well, I need to do it before, was it June? I at least need to do the upgrade so it's like in place, and then I'll just roll it back.
Yeah, I just throw a spare hard drive in there, load up your Windows, do the update, and then swap back over to your regular drive.
Yeah.
That's what I originally did. Is
just so I can pull the product key and be like, okay, now I have the product key. Yeah.
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 Because once it's registered to that machine, you're fine. Or a copy of Windows 10 is registered to that machine, you're good.
Yep.
Matter of fact, I need to go out and do that to my father's machines. So if he does decide to go to it, then or need to go to it, we don't have to buy a copy of Windows 10 for him. Anyway.
Back to the news. There, one more thing that we have to touch on, I think. Well, actually, no, two more things. First one is they've updated some of the rec costs for Warzone, so to balance out some of the stuff in Warzone based on player feedback, they've changed the amount of rec point or rec levels that you have to spend in game for something. So for the carbine category, the normal carbine, instead of 4 rec levels, it's 2. So basically, after you clear a base in normal Warzone, or after a very short time in Warzone Assault, you can call in a carbine. So instead of having to wait to get a BR, just spawn with a carbine. Reign of Oblivion is, instead of 4, it is cost of 3. And then Blood of Suban, Yeah, Blood of Subban is, instead of 5, it's 4. The suppressor has been reduced from 2 to 1. Same thing for the bolt shot. The light rifle has been reduced from 5 to 4. The barbed lance, which is a light rifle variant, 5 to 4. And the dying star, 6 to 5. And then from
I really want to get my hands on that one.
I'm not sure.
Dying star.
What's the dying star? Is that the one that shoots 3 at once?
No. It actually, if I remember correctly, it shoots like a normal light rifle, but it has explosive characteristics.
Oh, dang. Wow.
So each shot as it hits you explodes. I would just like to
play. So like the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
By the way, if I just want to throw this in here. Ice Biteful.
Uh-huh.
If you guys want to see some of the more rare
weapons. Oh my gosh, weapons, yes.
Check his channel out. He does combinations of rare weapons. And
then he boosts them with damage boosts and speed boosts.
Yeah. It's really weird, and I don't know why 343 even made this possible, but you can stack boosts.
You can stack. Yeah, yes.
You can stack speed boosts, you can stack overshields, you can stack damage boosts.
I don't think you can stack overshields. I think it's just speed boosts and damage boosts that you can stack.
No, maybe that wasn't. Maybe that was a speed
because
boost. Because you can definitely stack to speed boosts. And I tell you what, you put 4 of them things on. Woo. He did that. I think he did it with Prophet's Bane. He did Prophet's Bane and 4 speed boosts.
And you already get a speed boost from the Prophet's Bane.
Exactly. He was like almost blinking across the map.
You would think he would be hacking.
Anyway, I just wanted to plug that. Yeah, no. Because I actually, tonight, I tried it, and it works. Of course, I was nowhere near as qualified to operate a Spartan moving that fast as he was, but hey. No, I just wanted to throw that in there since we were talking about weapons.
No, that's fine. If you want to see Warzone on crack, that's the place to go. It is insane. Eric Ibu said he gave him a Typhoon once for a video.
Cool.
And I do remember seeing his name. Eric Ibu, I do remember seeing your name about in one of his videos before, so that probably was it. And apparently we put him into a ranking up mood talking about the arena ranks.
You think?
I guess. So, and then for the saw, there's the normal saw got reduced from 5 to 4 rec levels, and then the appetite for destruction got reduced from 6 to 5.
I think the answer actually needs to go up one.
Yeah, because that thing is
just
a beast.
Terrorizes.
That thing is nuts. Well, it's a level 7, right? Or is it level 6? No, it was a level 6.
No, it's a level 6.
That's right. Well,
I pulled that out one time. And I picked the absolute wrong time to spawn with it. But that thing, it tears through whatever you pointed at. I wish I could have actually used the old clip.
Yeah, and there's always those moments in Warzone where you spawn in something or you spend 6, 7, 8, 9 rec levels. And then 10 seconds later, you're dead. And it's like, I just wasted all those rec levels.
Yeah, I did that tonight, spawned a legendary mantis, and lasted just long enough to get out of the loading dock, you know, where it pushes you out.
Yep.
I made it out of there, and then somebody jumped on the back of it and threw a grenade in it.
What map was this on?
Brain fart.
That's not a map in Halo 5.
The snow map.
Escape from ARC?
Yeah, the snow.
Oh, the snow map. Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
I know.
Anyway, I was coming out of the middle base, whatever that one is. I can't
think
what it's called now. Yeah, Fortress. And because we had, you know, we had our armory, we had Fortress, and we were taking the other armory. So I'm like, okay, I'll be safe spawning here. No. I learned my lesson.
I mean, I guess at that point, you really have to coordinate with your team. It's like, hey, I'm pulling out a vehicle, protect the spawn. But that really doesn't happen that often.
Well, it was one guy. There was one guy in there, and he happened to be just right above the vehicle spawn when I pulled that mantis out. I was pissed.
Yeah, and it really sucks because you can't defend yourself against it. You are defenseless. And they have the opportunity because they can get in position while you're still coming out. And then when you're out there and then you finally have control of your vehicle, they just hop on you.
Yeah, it's the... It's not the fact that, you know, I got boarded. That, okay, fine, whatever. It's the fact that it was a legendary. And, you know, mantises aren't exactly cheap anyway.
Nope, they're not. But they are beastly.
Oh, yeah. So I learned my lesson. It might be a long walk, but spawn at your home base with a vehicle like that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the waypoint news. Last thing was something that they teased during the X Games. They're for Killer Instinct Season 3, the Arbiter is going to be one of the fighters in there. Hmm. So for all of you KI fans out there, that's something that's coming down the road.
Hmm.
If they came to hear me beg,
I don't need that game.
They will be disappointed. I don't do a good impersonation of him at all.
I would almost buy the game just so I could get some footage of it.
I probably would too, to be perfectly honest. But I didn't even buy Forza for the, well, that was just a Warthog feature. I don't think it was really that impressive.
Yeah, I still think about buying Forza just so I could have the Warthog. But you can only view it in the garage. It's not like you can go out and drive it.
Right,
so.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know. It'd be cool, because Killer Instinct was one of those games that actually came, like, it was a demo that came preloaded with Xbox One or something, right? Like, if you bought one of the Xboxes, like, really early on, if you bought, like, a pre-order one, wasn't it one of those games that came, like, there was a demo that came with the Xbox? I don't know. I'm trying to remember.
I think so.
So, I don't know. It might, It might be something I at least look into.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. But that's pretty much it for news, I think, this week. There's nothing else that was quite a bit just from the Halo perspective that came out. Of course, there's a bunch of Forge maps coming out. There's a bunch of cool little Forge features and tutorials that's being released constantly with Forge. And then with the update coming this month, we are supposed to be getting, at least they're, from what they said during the February stream, it seems like we're supposed to be getting a ball type variant, which I'm guessing is going to account for things like oddball, griff ball, ricochet. I'm guessing not assault. Maybe assault. I don't know.
I mean, that's what the original griff ball was built off of. It was assault, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was assault, but then it was more like oddball in Halo 4.
Yeah, and then it moved into the ricochet game type. But
so I think, I mean, either way,
for the official griff ball stuff, but anyway,
right?
We get a ball.
Yes. They specifically said ball, like having options for ball modes. So that pretty much, I think, indicates oddball, griffball, ricochet. So if that's the case, then you have at least three game modes right there, which will be nice. Mm-hmm. People really still want infection. That's just one of those things. There's so many crazy customs out there for better or for worse, because there are some really just redundant and, to me, some boring infection variants that have been made out in the past, fat kid.
Well, the thing I'm looking forward to is not so much the infection games, but how they use that infection game type, like in Jenga,
mm-hmm.
or in what's that one we used to play on Halo 4?
Husky Raid, Rochambeau.
No, the one where they hammer down the vehicles and stuff.
Oh, Trash Compactor.
Not that one, but yes, that one too. No, where we were all standing out on the platform and the man cannons would shoot the stuff at us.
Oh, I know which map you're talking about, but I never remember the name of that one. Because it was on Erosion, down the water.
Yes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I like Trash Compactor because that one was from Halo 3 that I had a lot of mm-hmm. good custom memories from Halo 3. And Reach has some good customs, too. Speed. Love me some Speed.
Another infection variant.
Yep. Indeed it is. So that's another one. And I think Halo 5 is versatile enough to have something like the insane game mode in Reach.
I'm sure it is.
I would really like to see them, like, after all the content update is done, just kind of drop it sometime, like September, October next year. It's like, oh, hey, by the way, have fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what Forgers would do with that.
Oh, it would go crazy. It'd be so cool. I mean, just look at all the fun stuff Pete the Duck made with it. I mean, you had skee-ball come from it. And that was a fun mode.
Tic-tac-toe. Rochambeau. Real Rochambeau.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, there is... You could do some really crazy stuff. And no one even had a full understanding of the tag system for Reach either. So I bet there's still some things that we could have done in Reach that people didn't even think of. And then mix that with the scripting engine that we have in Halo 5. Oh my gosh. Oh, you talk about making the possibilities endless.
Now my head hurts.
I'll leave that to the forgers. But seriously, that would be one of the coolest things I think you could do. Would to be have, let me take the scripting engine, and they're even expanding upon that. I mean, one of the things that we're really wanting right now is trigger volumes, which they'll probably put in a couple of months. And if you could have something like an insane mode, you could have all the stuff happening on map, and then you can have all this stuff happening with the game type. If you mix those up together, you're in for nearly endless possibilities of customs. I mean, you want to do an actual pod race? Get race. You'd want to do that off a race, but you could have the scripting elements to do some stuff. Heck, it'd be cool if you actually script some turrets. Like, actually be able to have an AI track people as they go by and then just shoot randomly. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Put a little bit of AI into it. Anyways.
Well, I mean, you could do it with what they have now. Granted, it wouldn't be able to shoot, like, bullets, but you could have it shoot energy cores at you.
Yeah, that only goes so far.
Well, it's a turret. Leave me alone.
I'm just saying I want more.
More. I will be happy with, let's get game types in.
True, yeah.
Let's, you know, get the basics in, and, you know, don't leave out the forgers, don't leave out the people that like Warzone. Let's get what Halo has always had in, and then let's add to that.
Agreed. Yep.
We got a good base going. Let's get that real stable and then go nuts. But exactly. I agree with everything. Yes, I want more.
Yeah. So something that's not necessarily Halo specific, but something that came out. If for anyone that watched the Halo 5 Live, there was a segment by the game theorists, and they theorized the realistic possibility of making the Mjolnir class armor. And the same guys from the game theory, the game theorist, did a comparison with the lightsaber and the energy sword. So we posted that up on our website, and this came out this week. And there's some interesting analysis on kind of the design of the weapons and overall, like, which theoretical weapon would win the theoretical fight. So,
spoiler, energy sword. Oh.
Well, now you gave away the ending, but there is...
We're Halo fans. We always know the energy sword wins.
Shotgun beats sword.
Not always.
Most of the time, shotgun beats sword.
Not always. Anyway.
Stop ruining my mantra. But yes.
I just want to have some fun.
So there is that video. It's about 17 minutes long. It's pretty interesting. There's a lot more analysis of the lightsaber than there is the sword. And I know when I posted it, a few people had some things to say about them not going into too much lore depth. And another thing is they take it in kind of analysis of the Halo 2 energy sword for a reason that I will leave up to you to go watch the video for. But it's still an interesting watch. And I know being Star Wars lately, I'm assuming a lot of the people that like Halo probably like Star Wars too, so it's still an interesting video to go watch. I definitely go recommend watching it.
I thought it was a really good video. I liked it.
So did I.
I liked the way it was presented, because, you know, it wasn't just wild theory thing. The stuff that he discusses in the video is fact, and it's already proven fact, and with everything from the actual construction of the sword to the most probable fighting style that would be used with those swords. It's a really good watch. I really enjoyed watching that one.
And a lot of the other movies, a lot of the other videos under the game theorist the Game Theory tab. So they have like a lineup of shows that they do, but the Game Theory ones are the ones I always watch. And there are some really good ones on there. I watch every single one of them because they're just that interesting. So yeah, definitely go check that out. It's up on our homepage. So we have a blog post about it, so go check it out there. A couple other smaller things before we hit the campaign topic. Arena Breakout has been removed from the Team Slayer playlist. So a lot of people seem like they really didn't like it. I enjoyed Arena Breakout, honestly, for me. Much more than regular Breakout. I like it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, but I think it's one of those things the novelty wore off with it as far as being in a, you know, a Slayer playlist.
Yeah.
I mean, if they would mix it in with the regular Breakout, I think it would do better. You know, actually put it in the Breakout playlist. But yeah, I can see where the novelty would wear off.
Yeah, and I think people were just, I don't know if they were just tired of it or they really didn't like it. I enjoyed it, personally.
Yeah, when it was in its own playlist, I enjoyed it a lot. It really, in that game style, the flag gets a lot more attention than it does in regular Breakout.
Yes, it does. And you have a lot of games determined by flag caps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff in there. And then, shoot, there was one other thing I wanted to mention before we moved on. I can't remember. If I remember it, I'll bring it up. But I can't remember now. It was something. dang it. I wish I remembered what it was. Anyways, so let's move on to campaign mission number 8, Swords of Sanghelios. This is one of the other missions that we were allowed to stream during the media preview week. So we've played this one a lot. Not too much depth of story, but we do get to see a little bit of change in terms of how the elites have kind of changed since the war with the humans and some of the dynamics going on behind the elites politically, which is actually pretty interesting. So we've always had the story in Halo a little bit more of the background from the human side when it comes to politics. And we kind of got a glimpse. We started to get a glimpse of it in Halo 2, where with the opening cutscene where you saw the Thelvadam, who became the Arbiter, in front of this whole council. And that's when you start to understand the hierarch and the political structure of the Covenant. And then it wasn't really expanded upon in Halo 3 because it was really just the prophets trying to screw everyone over. And Halo 4, we started to get a glimpse of it a little bit just from factions developing. But this is the first time I think we've actually gotten to get a little bit more in-depth perspective of the Sangheili specifically and their political structure and how the power structure rules. Because for the elites, it's the women who rule the keeps. And the keeps are like the clans and like countries in a way. So, and the women have started to bear arms and bring up power. So and that's how it's been for a while. And then we're just starting to see that now. So the men would be the fighters, and then the women would be the politicians. So it's a little bit different dynamic than what we're used to from our Western society. So it's really cool.
Well, I wouldn't exactly say politicians. I mean, they did hold a very high power as far as in their keeps, but it was still up to the males to rule the keeps as far as when it came to what you would consider like law and order. The females were more in control of taking care of the finances and managing bloodlines. Don't take that the wrong way. They were very powerful individuals in the family. They could influence the males very easily. But here, like you were saying, Dust, you're seeing more women take a combat role where, you know, in traditional Sanghelios, you would see, granted, that, you know, the female and the male children would train side by side up to a certain age, and then the females would start taking the path of where they'd learn how to take care of the finances and manage the families and the keeps. And then the males would go on to learn to be warriors and be more of a commanding role. And you're seeing seeing the women kind of move into that role as well. So it really surprised me when the first Sinhala you hear is a female.
Yeah.
In the mission.
So another thing to that as well is, we do start to see a lot of the, well, I guess not a lot, because we really haven't seen much of it outside of, like the books, but we do start to see the women take a more active role. I think, specifically in the games, we start to see the females of the elites be more active and involved. And the Arbiter is like one of the proponents is like, and well, okay, so let me step back a little bit. For the what was the other faction that we killed off in the first mission? What was the faction name?
The Storm Faction?
No. Well, it was Storm Faction, but what was the name? Shoot. Why am I blanking on this?
In the first mission?
Yeah, we killed the leader. Gosh, what is that faction called? Let me see if it's in the guide.
I mean, this is the first time we've seen the...
What's Julum Dama's faction called?
The Storm.
Is it the Storm? Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was something else for some reason. Anyways, but compared to the Storm, which was a lot more kind of traditional, I think it held a more traditional hierarchy and structure for like men are the warriors and women are doing the stuff at home, where the Arbiter was more willing to open up and really kind of be like make radical changes to the way St. Helios operated. And now he's...
Yeah, I think in the game they referred to it, looking at Eric Abu posted in the chat, that they actually just referred to him as the Covenant.
Okay. I thought there was either like... I thought it was like in Mission 2 when it was Blue Team talking about how they heard chatter about it. I thought they said the faction name, but I'd have to go back and check. I can't remember specifically. Anyways, if it's the Storm, great.
Well, I know in the books that they were called the Storm Faction, but even at that point, they would still refer to themselves as the Covenant.
Servants of the Abiding Truth, Eric Abu said. Not the Storm, but the Servants of Abiding Truth. That's what I was thinking of. So yeah, that was Julum Dama's clan or people or whatever. So we got...
Well, I know they were referred to that somewhere, but I can't remember where now. Anyway.
Anyways, so it's interesting to see when we start to see this political change within the elite structure. And this is the first time we see it in the games. We see it in the books. We see it in the Kilo 5 trilogy a little bit. I still haven't finished Broken Circle. I think I've restarted that book 4 times by now, and I still haven't finished it. But I'm
dust.
But because when I talked to the person at New York Comic Con, not last year, but the year before, it was like supposed to be 60% like pre-war and then like 40% current. So I'm guessing that 40% current might have a little bit of in it too.
I would say.
I don't know.
I would say probably about 20%.
Okay.
The bulk of the book is about the history of the Covenant. The last quarter of the book is you're starting to get into, well, you get into the elite's rebellion against the Covenant, but it still has a lot more to do with the, you know, the backstory of the Covenant than it does what was going on during the, what do they call it? The Great Schism?
Yeah. The other way around, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, they do go into a lot of detail about that as well, but yeah, the way I saw the book, it got into more of the history of the Covenant more.
Yeah, and I'm interested in reading that, because I was interested in the insurrectionist stuff. I just, for some reason, whenever I've picked it up, I just haven't gotten past the, because who's the, gosh, what's, I can't even think of, what's the prophet that we were following? Anyway, the main prophet that we were following, it's hard to get past his stuff sometimes. I don't want to spoil it too much.
Yeah. Are you talking about the first prophet we come into contact with? Or the
I guess the first one, because I'm like, I know of this. I'm guessing the second one is the jerk.
The one that we meet on the planet of red and blue.
Yeah, I'm talking about that one. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you haven't even got to the good part yet.
Dang it. At some point I will be reading that book and finishing it. I think that one, and then there's a few evolution stories. I think those are the only stories I haven't finished reading. Well, and the latest book that came out. I haven't read that one either. I forget what it's called.
The latest book?
Yeah,
I've got it downloaded. I haven't read it yet. Yeah.
New Blood's supposed to be coming physical next month, I think. At least if the Amazon listing was right. The physical version of New Blood. So I'll be getting that one. I have to look that up, actually. See if it's actually on the Amazon listed still. Eric Kibu actually made an important point, since we were talking about the Jewel and Damas faction, that I wanted to... Yeah, Shadow of Intent, that's it. I haven't read that yet. Thank you, Pence. He said, where they are called the Storm, servants of the Abiding Truth, they seem to have merged with Jewel and Damas Covenant, or at least support them. The whole Storm thing is a journalist getting information wrong and calling them the Storm when Storm is actually a rank.
Yeah, I just realized that. The, was it, Jewel M'Dama actually starts his own after getting away from Trevelyan to go against the servants of the Abiding Truth, where I believe he actually winds up taking them over.
Ah, okay. I'm guessing that's an escalation that I haven't read. I haven't read either.
Well, I don't think it was ever actually put out there.
Okay. It could be one of those Cannon Fathers, too, that I haven't read. There's a lot.
I think that was one of those read between the line things. Because the last we hear of Jewel, he's on one of the Sangheili settlements, not on Sanghelios, when he finds out about the Didact. So, but that's different subject, but anyway.
Got it. So, yeah. Interesting stuff about the Covenant. It's not really... I mean, this is kind of one of those side things, like from the main storyline in Halo. And for Mission 8, you're going to find the Arbiter, or Thel'Vadam, to help in your search for the Master Chief. Because in Mission 5, Master Chief and Blue Team escaped on the Guardian, and now you're trying to figure out where he is. So from all that stuff, you're on Sanghelios, you have allied with the Swords of St. Helios, that is the Arbiter's clan, or guild, I guess clan would be kind of the most accurate. And what's the female elite's name?
Why are you asking me all these hard questions?
Because for some reason my brain isn't working tonight. And I know why my brain isn't working tonight, because I've been working overtime for the past 2-3 days for work, and I haven't had... I mean, that's the reason why 525 isn't out yet, because I've been having to work overtime to get stuff done for work.
Let's see she done. I cannot remember her
name. There's even dialogue for it. Oh, gosh.
What does Eric Ibu say in the chat there?
Maki. Thank you.
Shows you how much I pay attention.
I mean, I
just play the game, man.
I feel kind of bad now too, because I was like, I know it, but for some reason I just can't think of anything tonight. My brain is just mush, I guess. But so we learned a little bit about, like, when we first landed, we learned a little bit about how the Arbiter kind of brought the keeps of St. Helios together, and now they're kind of rebuilding their society. And she's one of the elders that the Arbiter has entrusted power with, and the Arbiter is off in the council chambers in this area that you've been deployed to go extract him, because remnants of I guess the Abiding Truth are trying to attack him and take him out there. So you're going in to extract him. There's quite a few. From a collectible standpoint, there's quite a few pieces of intel. I think there's 12. I think this one has like the most amount of intel that you can get on it. So
it also has the most fun ones to get.
There's some tricky ones. And then there's a couple.
I think it's like seven or eight.
Eight.
The seventh or eighth. Yeah. It's like.
Well,
I'm looking forward to doing that one.
We'll get to them.
Anyway.
So as you start off, you're in this big puddle of water. You're actually down from a waterfall that kind of empties out into a lot more, like you're on a cliff edge, basically. So there's a little temple area off to the right. You go up there, you'll find your first piece of intel. Then you keep on going along the river. You find, and just before you enter a cave structure, you can actually look out over this big vista. St. Helios looks really pretty if you take the time to stand and look. There's a couple of statues, and behind those statues, there's another piece of intel that you can grab, and then you enter the cave structure. And
excuse me. Oh, I'm tired too. Can't tell.
Once you get into the next area, that's where you find your first group of Covenant. And one of the things that you want to note here, for achievement standpoint, perspective, is there's an achievement for, I think it's breaking 10 breakable walls. Is that right? I think it's 10. Oh, GT said he would be right back. There's an achievement for breaking 10 achievable or 10 breakable walls. I don't think it's difficulty dependent. And one of the first ones is here as you enter the cave structure. You head off over to the right, and that's where you'll actually you'll find the wall to break through. So you want to make sure that you get that or get as many of those as possible. And there's, I think, like maybe 12, 13 breakable sections on here. So there's plenty to get the 10 that you need. So going through here, you'll take out your first group of Covenant. They're pretty easy. It's just a handful of grunts and I think 3 elites. And then you'll go on to your next section, more Covenant to fight. And then your next piece of intel, your third piece of intel is going to be just before you go on to the next section, your third group of Covenant in this area. There's a waterfall kind of in the middle, so you can take either path up to the right or take a more low path to the left following the open canyon. So underneath that waterfall, there's a piece of intel. And then in the next area, you're going to have an elite on a mounted plasma cannon. And then there's a turret over closer to where the next pathway is into the next part of the mission. So you can either flank right up into a cave area and get behind the turret, the shade turret, or you can go around left and slowly make your way up, taking out enemies slowly and then trying to maybe toss some nades in behind the shade turret. Your fourth piece of intel is also in the cave on the right if you do the flanking route, so you can go and pick that one up there as well. There's just the one wall in this section, but there's a few more walls coming up for the breakable stuff. After you get past the first shade turret, you'll have an area where you can pick up some nice weapons. I think there's a carbine you can pick up. There's some plasma grenades and a sword up looking over a... am I jumping ahead?
Let's see. You're just past the
fourth. No, I'm not. I'm not jumping ahead. So yeah, that's right. There's a... Because the piece of intel is right by the energy sword. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little archway you can pull out you can get the intel, and then there's a carbine around there. There's an energy sword and some plasma grenades. So pick those up. You can use the carbine to pick off the enemy snipers if you are on, I think, heroic or legendary. The jackals in the next big canyon area are jackal snipers. Otherwise, they have carbines. So be careful on that. And your fire team will shout out to you. It's like, hey, look out for these. So that's not something that you need to worry about too much. And in this next area, there's also, I want to say, maybe 4 or 5, maybe I think 4 breakable walls that you can smash through for that achievement. So make sure you do that. There's a whole plethora of weapons here, and there's lots of different approach vectors that you can take. So if you head off to the left, you can go pick up a plasma caster. Actually, right before you enter the area, just after the arch where the sword is, if you take out some of those jackals. There's a sniper sitting right there. So you can pick that up to snipe some of the jackals as well. There is a mounted plasma turret over on the right side, which you eventually have to go towards anyways. So be careful as you're approaching that area. There's a big cluster of Covenant there as well as Covenant dropping in. So you can get easily flanked. Just be aware of your surroundings as you're going into this area. As you make your way up past the plasma turret, there's going to be another set of plasma turrets with some elites on them. And then there's some grunts and jackals around. Pretty easy to take out, even on Legendary, if you take your time with it. There's a lot of stuff that you can pick up along the way. There's some needlers. I think there's... I guess needlers. And there's the plasma caster from back a little bit before, but other than that, there's just kind of what the enemies are dropping. As you get past the other two plasma turrets, my attack method I usually do is there's a area up on the right that you can smash through. It's like the kind of like the dome shaped smashable wall. That's the one I usually go through. And if you go that route, there you got to be careful that you don't go in too quickly, because there is a camo elite that will come out and has a sword. You can see him pretty visibly. He walks pretty slowly, but just be careful as you go in there to take him out. And there's also a weapon rack in there, and you can pick up a carbine as well. So that's the route I go. You can also, after you get past the two plasma turrets, go over to the left, and that route takes you up through grunts and jackals, and then there's a couple of elites up there as well that you have to fight your way through. But it doesn't really take too much effort to go. But I would think if you're wielding at least a plasma pistol or maybe a plasma rifle and then something else, taking the right option and then taking out the camo elite to get that sword is probably the best bet. I don't know what your strategy is for that one, GT.
That pretty much the same, except for I usually stick with the noob combo.
That works too.
Or a needler.
Yeah, that works too. Well, and the thing for me is I drop my BR and Magnum so quickly because there's just not weapon crates to replenish that ammo. So I'm going a lot of Covenant weapons.
The bulk of this mission you'll spend using Covenant weapons, because there's not that much human ammo, which, I mean, it makes sense. You're on Sanghelios.
Pretty much.
But yeah, for the bulk of the mission, you'll wind up using Covenant weapons, and there's a good selection. They do a pretty good job of giving you the weapons you need to work the area you're in.
Throughout the campaign, too, which actually makes Halo 5 campaign, even on Legendary, enjoyable and durable to play, for the most part. Because that was one thing in the past Halo games is, especially on Legendary, you'd have to go around fishing for ammo, where this time it's like, hey, there is ammo everywhere.
Yeah. Well, the one thing about, you know, the earlier Halo games is you really had to think ahead especially when you're playing on Legendary. Okay, what weapons do I need to have going into the next room? You know, do I need to have the sniper rifle? Do I need to have a plasma pistol? Do I need to make sure that I bring a couple of plasma grenades with me? Things like that. Where in Halo 5, it seems like, not specifically, but it looks like you have the weapons to get the job done in the area that you're working. You don't have to make sure that four rooms before you get to this one, you got to make sure you pick up that sniper rifle or the rocket launcher or anything like that, and then carry it with you, and then remember not to use it because you need it in that one room. So I think they do a lot better job of that weapon placement in Halo 5.
Yep. Yeah, and they do a pretty good job with it too. As you get up past either the camo elite or going to the left through the grunts and stuff, you'll come up against another plasma turret. And then in the back where you're supposed to go, there's an entryway past a hallway, I guess. I don't know. But there's an elite up there with a fuel rod, so be careful when you approach him. But also in this area, before you go past the fuel rod elite, you want to kind of make a 180 and where you're facing back down into the open pit, which you just crawled up, and there is a piece of intel on top of a broken statue. Best way to find this is either use our intel guide that we put out, a couple months ago, or you can use the Artemis ping and you can get the visual and audio ping on where it is. But if you turn around, like if you're looking out straight from the hallway that you're supposed to go into, you'll see the broken statue, and it's kind of leaning over, and it's literally on top of the statue closest, on the piece closest to the open pit. So you can find a piece of intel there. And then there's another piece of intel where if you're actually standing up on top of where that intel is, you look kind of past, if you look to the right, there's kind of a little shelf that sticks out on the opposite side that you can really only get to if you're on top of there and then you're ground pounding. But once you find it, you can kind of jump down, and then there's a little actual structure piece that's kind of jutted out into the big pit. Jump on that, and then you can jump from there over thruster pack or ground pound onto the next piece of intel. So that'll get you both pieces of intel in this area. Pretty easy to find with the Artemis ping in this part. Next, once you get through the big tunnel, you'll actually see where the Arbiter is being bombarded by the other faction of Covenant. And Maquis tells you, yes, that's where the Arbiter is. That's where you're going to go eventually rescue him. But before you do that, there is another piece of intel. Just as you come out and as you see the phantoms, and I think there may be spirits in that group too. I'm not sure. But you see the phantoms, and I think without some other Covenant air vehicles, aircraft.
Yeah, spirits.
Are there some spirits? Okay, so you see some Covenant aircraft flying towards a temple. That's where Thelvadam is. That's where the Arbiter is. And just as you get into that area, you make an immediate left. There's a piece of intel there. And then on top of that, it's actually a skull. Now, the skull's a little tricky to get to. Yeah.
A little?
Depending on your difficulty level, I mean, yeah, sure. It could be quite difficult if you have a problem doing trick jumps.
This is a very skill jump.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's hard to explain over audio alone, but I will try my best. As you are walking out, if you walk straight out into the open area, you'll see kind of some steps. Like you'll see a path that's kind of paved, and then there's some steps. But just before the steps, there's a little pillar thing to the right. You jump all the way on top of that, all the way to the very top. Then you turn around, and there is an archway piece that you will need to jump over, and then thruster clamber up on top of. And then this is the really tricky part. You have to get a sprinting jump from jumping from... So the arc piece is kind of split into two. So you land on the closest piece to you. You'll start sprinting, jump, land on the second piece, and then you will jump, and then you will stabilize or ground pound, whichever one's easier for you. And then if you're ground pounding just before you ground pound, you will thruster over and clamber up. Or if you're stabilizing after you stabilize for a little bit before you start to fall, you'll thruster over and then clamber up. The tricky part is getting the timing right. You have to time it to where, I would say to where your feet, somewhere between your feet and your knees, would be level with the platform you're trying to jump to. And then you get your skull. Is the hardest, the hardest skull to...
It's the hardest one in the game.
It's the hardest skull to obtain in the game.
But the bandana skull still makes this one look easy. To help you locate this, the piece of intel that you pick up is directly below the skull.
Right.
So where you pick up the intel and just look up, and that piece of rock above you is where you need to be to get the skull. It's challenging. I think it took me half an hour.
Well, and it's appropriate because it is the mythic skull, so it makes sense.
Because, you know, everybody wants to put the mythic skull on.
Well, when you're doing a lazo, I mean, yeah.
Thankfully, they didn't put one of those achievements.
Yeah, we still got to do them for MCC, don't we?
We still got to do a lot for MCC.
Yeah, we do. Lots of achievements to get on that one. So after you get the intel and skull, whatever you want to do, instead of jumping over across the bridge that was destroyed, you want to, where you came out originally and saw the Covenant aircraft fly by, you want to take a right And then there's a spot in the ground that you can ground pound down into, and then there's a tunnel underneath. And down there is another piece of intel, and you can also pick up carbines. I think there's... Are there some beam rifles down there? Or fuel rods? Something like that? There's some fancy weapon down there. I think it's a beam rifle.
I think there's a beam rifle. Yeah, that's it. Beam rifle and then some carbine ammo.
Yep, and grenades. Quite a few plasma grenades. So I think there's enough down there for just about your whole fire team to pick some up. So pick those up, and then you get your ninth piece of intel. You can sprint and jump across the broken bridge to your next area. There's a few pieces of breakable stuff that you can break here for the achievement as well. And I would suggest there's two ways you can approach this area. You can either come from underneath. Well, actually, there's technically three. You can break the area underneath. You can come from underneath and take out some of the enemies that way. You can come from the top. So you could go around, clamber up to the top of the bridge, and then go in from the top. Or you can flank all the way to the left. If you flank to the left, before you encounter enemies, you'll actually find a fuel rod laying on the ground. And that's actually useful for the next part in here, because you'll be battling hunters.
Yeah, definitely save that one for the hunters.
And even if you don't go that way initially, just to know that the fuel rod is there for the hunters is good. Also in that area, well, I guess I won't get too ahead of myself, but taking out the enemies in this area, there's grunts, jackals, and there is an elite on a shade turret. There is some other, I think there's some other elites with carbines. So just kind of be careful in here. There are a lot of them. And if you are staying back on the area where you first came into, the elites will charge you. So be careful of that. There is some plasma caster ammo. So after you take out all the enemies at the first wave, there's, in addition to the fuel rod, pick up the plasma caster ammo that is behind the shield door. And then there is a sniper rifle up on top of that. Now, the sniper rifle isn't as effective on the hunters, but if you manage to get up there maybe beforehand, before you take out all the enemies, then you could use that to help take out the elites, maybe, if that's something that you want to do. So after the hunters come in, you'll take them out, use a fuel rod, or just pump as much ammo into them as you can. I would say if you are on normal difficulty or easy difficulty, you could use the shade turret pretty easily. But other than that, they will screw you up majorly if you are in the shade turret.
Yeah, if you're heroic and legendary, just stay away from the shade
turret. Yeah, just kind of rely on the fuel rod, and also projectile weapons seem to do best. So carbines, BR if you have them, Magnum, or else just keep on pumping lead in them until they fall over. I think there's plenty of carbine ammo around to where you could use, pretty much just rely on carbine to take them out. After you take out the hunters, you get the fun stuff. You get the mantises to play with.
Mm-hmm. And if you're playing on co-op, you can get an achievement.
Which is that achievement?
The one thing you have to remember with this achievement, which is called Praying Mantis, is if you're going for this achievement, the two people in the mantises cannot get out of the mantises. They have to stay in the mantises until the achievement pops. Because as soon as one of them gets out, the achievement is over with. It won't pop. So make sure that you watch for your checkpoints. If one of the mantises gets too damaged or gets destroyed, revert immediately. But those are pretty much about all you have to do. Just keep two people in the mantises until you complete the level.
Sweet.
And they're actually really handy.
And even on Legendary, I find that they're not, like, if you're playing smart, they survive quite a while.
Yeah, they are very durable. There's lots of cover for you to hide behind from the other vehicles and hunters. Because, there's four hunters in that next area, I believe?
Yes.
Along with one wraith. Two wraiths, that's right. So, if you're doing your intel hunt along with it...
Actually, three wraiths. I take that back. There's three wraiths.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, three wraiths.
I think two... No. Four ghosts?
Three ghosts. Three ghosts, assorted jackals and elites with fuel rod, and Let's see. Yeah, you've got two sets of hunters.
There's a lot of stuff going on, basically.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And there are a lot of weapons scattered about the entire area. So you're not going to run out of ammunition.
No, you're not. Especially if you're just staying in the Mantis. Now, if you're co-op budding with more than two people, then you can walk around and pick up some really handy stuff. Really handy stuff. Mm-hmm.
There's beam rifles, plasma casters, turrets, fuel rod cannons. Plasma caster. I think there's an extra wraith in that area or the area before.
Yeah, just before you actually enter the big battle area, there's that wraith that you can pick up. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So there's definitely plenty of heavy weapon.
Lots of it. And for the fourth person, you can just pick up a ghost. There's a few of those.
Or they can run around in the areas where the mantises can't go and bait.
Be bait.
Oh.
Other thing to note, if you're not going for the mantis achievement, there is another piece of intel that you can get after you get into the mantis, that first little area. If you jump up to the right, there's actually another statue. They have a lot of fallen over statues. There's a statue that's fallen over, and it's over on the right-hand side. You can jump up to that area, and then in the back right of that first initial cylinder area, that circle area, all the way in the back, there's a piece of intel, so make sure you grab that. And then as you go through what's pretty much the big battle here, you're going through a whole crap ton of firepower with the two pairs of hunters and the ghosts and the wraiths and all the covenant with freaking ridiculous weapons. There are some areas that you can use the stomp ability with the mantis to help go towards that first achievement, and you want to get those, make sure you get those. And then there's also some walls that you can smash on the left hand side that you can use to help go towards that achievement as well. I will say, if you are going on foot, stick to the left, because that's where a lot of those power weapons are going to be. Like just after you get into the initial first area, there's actually a fuel rod kind of as you step out, but then swing to the left, and then you'll pick up a lot of the heavier weapons. So you'll have your beam rifles, your plasma casters, and there are enemies with fuel rods that will drop them, so you can pick up ammo for those if you have a fuel rod.
Not to mention you have a lot more cover.
That too. A lot more cover on the left. And you can actually, you can kind of play support, or you can do what GT said and play bait and distract some enemies while mantises flank and try to pull out some firepower behind enemy lines, basically. So use that to your advantage as much as you can, especially if you're playing co-op. And as you get through this area, as you get to the very end, there is an area above the entryway that you would actually go to the next area. You kind of want to backpedal a little bit, go over to the left side where another hunter is, or another pair of hunters are. And after you take them out, or after you carefully avoid them, you want to go to the top. And there's a little shelf that you can jump onto, and then there's a little cave up in the top, and you want to go all the way in there. And there's another piece of intel up there with also some fuel rod and another plasma caster. And then you can ground pound from the top down. That would also go towards your first achievement as well. And then proceed onto the next area, which it gets a whole lot easier from here on out. This is this big bowl of Covenant power weapon mess is really the big battle that...
Especially if you still have the mantis.
Yes, and you can take the mantis all the way to the end from here on out. Once you get that mantis, stay in that mantis as long as you can. It makes it a lot easier.
Oh, yeah, especially on Legendary.
So much on Legendary. So make your way through the next area. There are going to be some grunts and some jackals. Pretty easy to clean up with the mantis, even on Legendary. And then as you get into the next area, it's a little bit smaller than before, but you have some drop pods coming in with elites and grunts. Strategically take those out. Another thing I will say is whenever I'm using the mantis on the jackals and grunts, I will use the machine gun turret. And then if it's elite hunters or wraiths or vehicles, then I'll use a combination of the missiles and the chain gun. I really won't use the missile pods on the smaller infantry, just because I think it's unless they're the ones right there, then go ahead and use them. Like if you're not really worrying about it. So like if you, I guess in this next section, since it is only grunts and jackals, you'll be able to get a lock on them. So you can just fire your missiles, and then whatever those don't get, you can clean up with your machine gun. But most of the time, I will say, save your missiles for the bigger enemies. Don't necessarily waste it on the small fry.
Yeah, I use missiles on groups, you know, when you have...
Yeah, but the splash damage doesn't seem really effective for the missiles that come out of the Mantis.
Well, I don't use the splash damage. I more sweep the area. In other words, I don't really let it lock onto any one target. I just kind of sweep the area and then clean up with a machine gun.
Gotcha.
But I will time those, you know, the use of the rocket launcher on, you know, to balance it with taking care of the heavy vehicles and or enemies first.
Gotcha. Yep. I kind of do the same thing. Coming into this final bowl area, you have the drop pods, like I said before. Strategically take out all the enemies. The first wave is pretty much a pretty good mix of grunts and a few elites, and then the second wave is all elites. Just make sure you watch out for the fuel rods, because they will tear up your Mantis pretty badly if you're not paying attention. The last piece of intel is going to be right before you enter the temple. So often to the right-hand side, there's kind of a pool, and you can jump in the pool. Even though it looks black and bottomless, it's not bottomless. It's knee-deep. So you can jump in there and go get your final piece of intel for this mission. Then hop back in your Mantis, go ahead and march straight on into the temple. And you can kind of just walk past the enemies. They're fighting with the other covenant in there already. So the Abiding Truth or Storm Covenant, whatever, are fighting the Arbiter's Covenant right now, trying to go up and kill them. So you can actually just take your Mantis, walk straight up to the Arbiter, and then as you get to him, there'll be a little short animation, and then that's the end.
You get to watch the Arbiter kick some...
Yeah, and the one thing I'm kind of sad about is you don't get to interrupt him or kill them yourself. Because there's a few times it's like, I'm trying to go kill him, and you just walk right through them.
Yeah, actually, in the guide, when they show the end of the mission, just a little screenshot, they have the player in the Mantis standing behind the Arbiter, facing the door you just walked through.
Yep.
I was like, really? But anyway, you know, overall, I like the mission. It's a good mix between foot and vehicle combat. On Legendary, it is a real challenge. You've really got to pay attention to your surroundings, especially with the upgrades hunters have gotten.
Yes, they're more deadly than ever.
You know, I thought the first time I came across a hunter, this was in CE, and of course I didn't know that you could just one-shot them with a pistol.
Pistol whip.
I thought, God, these enemies are almost impossible to kill. And then somebody showed me the pistol trick, and I'm like, oh, well, geez. It kind of took all the fun out of the fight, but I think they finally got the hunter back to where it should have been the first time, or what it felt like when you didn't know the pistol trick with the original hunters. So I'm good. I'm glad to see the hunters back to that level. You know, one-shotting hunters, as neat as it is, it kind of takes away from the fight. You know, here you have this big bad tank thing, and you one shot with a pistol, he's done.
It was so much fun.
So I'm glad to see the... don't get me wrong, it's fun, but you see this big hulking creature running to you. Your first instinct is this is going to be a fight. And then it's not. You know?
Yeah.
It's just disappointing. I think the hunter has finally lived up to what it's been made out to be in Halo 5. And it's slowly been getting better through each iteration of the game, but I think they finally got it to the level of where its bark is as bad as its bite.
Yep, I would agree. And that's the mission. We'll talk about the cutscene stuff for the next one, and actually next time we'll talk campaign, which may not be next week. We might have some special guests on next week, but next time we talk campaign again, we'll be going through missions 9, 10, and 11. Because mission 9 and 11 are hub missions, and they're pretty easy to walk through.
Yay! Walk in, hey, look, it's a mission, and pretty walk much. Back out.
I mean, it literally takes 2.5 minutes to finish both of these.
It literally takes you longer to get the intel on these than it does to actually do the mission.
It does. Especially for 9, because there's 8 pieces of intel. But then there's only 5 for mission 11. But we'll get to those next time. But we're almost done through campaign. And then once we get done with campaign, we'll have our big campaign spoiler discussion. Talking about what's going on with Cortana, what's going on with the Forerunners, and the Librarian for taking the responsibility of the mantle, that kind of stuff. So we're kind of waiting until we get through the campaign to really dive into that kind of stuff. So if you're looking for the lore stuff, that's where a lot of it will be. So come March, that's when we'll really start to dig into, okay, what do certain parts of the campaign mean? So if that's what you're looking for, then stay tuned. We'll get there in the next 2 months or so. Nothing to fret. We've gone on quite a bit for tonight. I think we're going to skip past some of the other things that I wanted to talk about. There were a couple of topical things I wanted to address, but we've been going on for a little over 2 hours. So I think that is enough talking for today. I think we're just going to go ahead and wrap it up. One piece of sad news, due to family obligations and other things out of his control, Haas is stepping down from the community manager position and stepping away from Podtackler from any kind of official staff responsibility. So it's kind of sad to see him go. He's been a helpful team member for the past year or so, helping me out with getting stuff out on Twitter and coordinating stuff. So Haas, it's been a pleasure working with you. I know we're going to see you around still, but it won't be the same without you being there to help us out with stuff. But that said, we are still looking for people to help out. I know I haven't responded to any of the offers yet for volunteers for the past couple of months. I have been busy with life, and I just haven't looked through them. But I'm going to try to make a conscious effort now, since we have a CM position vacant, to look through some of the applications that we've received. And if you're interested and helping out in any small way whatsoever with Podtackler, then I encourage you to head over to podtackler.com/apply and submit in your resume, your portfolio of things that you've done in the past, that kind of stuff. And it's not something that we require that you add. It gives us a better idea of how you best can help us out and where I can best put you in a position to be a valuable member and a resourceful member of Podtackler. So Haas, it's been fun. Thank you again for being so kind as to host myself and Bio during PAX and being able to come out for the anniversary last year, and overall just being a good friend. And it's going to be different without you, buddy. Thank you for all the memories. It's been fun. So make sure you
love you a long time.
Yes. Make sure you give him your regards. He's still going to be around, but he won't be with Podtackler in any kind of official capacity. So he will get the ban hammer from the staff chat. He won't have an email anymore. He won't be tweeting out anymore, but from the Podtackler account. But he'll still be around. He'll still be perusing forums and helping out with game nights and hopefully participating in those as life for him allows it. So Haas, it has been a pleasure. We will miss you dearly. Thanks again, buddy. That's going to wrap it up. Thanks everyone for listening. Make sure you check out our social media and all that other stuff. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and obviously here on Twitch if you're listening to us live. We record on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern time. That is 6 p.m. Pacific time. I believe that is 2 a.m. GMT. And we are also We are also broadcasting live our Friday game nights. That is hosted by Mr. GT. And he is hosting customs. And then occasionally they go into matchmaking whenever there's a need for it to kind of spice things up or change things up a little bit. But because we have Forge from December, and because the Forge gurus are coming out with a lot of delicious content, there's lots of fun customs to play, and there's a great opportunity there to try some really cool ones and some really wacky ones. I'm hoping there's a better version of Rochambeau that comes out pretty soon, to be perfectly honest.
Well, you know, without the random weapon thing, it's kind of hard to build. The map would... I would like to see a map closer to the original.
Well, the random weapon... So the one that we played last week, the random weapons, I was fine with that mechanism, but then spawning into those two walkways, like, I would rather have it to where, like, you just spawn into that hallway.
Yeah, a more traditional map.
Because that could be easily done.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's just kind of a personal wish of mine.
I think this week we're going to play Battleship.
Ooh. I haven't seen this one yet.
I found it on the tubes today.
On the interwebs?
On the interwebs.
The interwebs. Such a magical place.
Tip, don't get off your mongoose.
Uh-huh. No.
Find out more tomorrow.
There you go. So, again, that happens on Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. 1:30 a.m. GMT. And we also have some Spartan Company events that we host on a weekly basis. So we have Tactical Tuesday, which is arena focused. And then we have Warzone Wednesdays, which everyone seems to play Warzone on Wednesdays. Kind of fits the mantra of Warzone Wednesday. So there are games that we get handed, and there are some games that we do really well with. So it's kind of a mixed bag. And we still have some spots on our Spartan Company. I think we are actually under the 20 mark. So there are a few spots left. Once we get filled up completely, and then we're going to start looking for event participation and game night participation to make sure that people that are playing are people are playing, because there are some Spartan Company accommodations that we like to get to. So if you're not playing Halo 5, you will get the boot. That's just how it is. We want people that are going to be in the company that are going to be routinely playing. And, of course, we are going to have some reserve for, of course, people that are dedicated in like being a part of the podcast or being a part of the community on a regular basis. They'll have a little more leeway on staying in the company compared to someone else. But ultimately, if you're playing games in Halo 5 and if you're playing with us during event nights, then you're guaranteed that you'll be pretty safe. Otherwise, you might be on the chopping block. So just make sure that you are following up on the weekly company events, and then you're also participating in the live stream stuff that we have going on as well. Make sure you check out our podcast network. We are part of a group of gaming-specific podcasts. So there are other podcasts like Critzcast, which is a Team Fortress 2 podcast, Guardian Radio, which is a Destiny podcast, and then The Learning Cliff, which is an EVE Online podcast. So lots of cool stuff to check out there. And then there's also Work in Progress and How to Murder Time, a couple of their smaller podcasts as well. Again, you can find those over on podka.st and just let them know that we sent you. They're good podcasts to listen to if you are interested in any one of those games, or if you are just looking for some other podcast to fill your ears to pass the time, whether it be at work or during your workout, whatever it may be. Good stuff to listen to. They're really good folks on all those podcasts, and check them out. They're really good shows to be a part of. That is going to wrap it up for us tonight, and I want to once again thank Haas for all of his service over the past, I think, is it like a year and a half that he's actually been in. It was PAX Prime 2014, or just shortly after that he became for us. So just a little shy of a year and a half. Again, we thank you for the time and dedication that you had. Best of luck on your endeavors with family and work and all that stuff. I hope to see you around. We'll be back next week with hopefully a very special podcast for an event that we will be hosting here pretty soon. Definitely excited to talk to you guys about this. It's something that we've been working on for a while. Really, really excited to pull this together. And it's going to involve a lot and a lot and a lot of Halo. More details next week, at least hopefully next week. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. On behalf of myself and GT, thanks everybody. Keep on fragging trucks.